Lonely Man has got the same move with every club. I'm the only golfer with the feeling of greatness. I'm the only golfer living. That's got the master move and the feeling of greatness.
Hey, welcome to the Feeling of Greatness podcast. I'm here with my brother Tim Graves. We just got back from a really fun weekend in Las Vegas. We played our annual interclub championship for our club and had a total blast. I always have not only have a blast playing golf with Tim in these tournaments, but we go out there and it's a little battle. I remember we got out of the car, we should pull up at the golf course at
TPC Summerlin.
TPC Summerlin. Yeah, we pulled up the first golf course, and you know, Tim and I see you maybe once a week at the most, but you said, hey, when's the last time you played 18 holes? I'm like, last time we were here a year ago. But so it's like knocking off rust, and at the same time, just going out there and battling around a golf course, which yeah, I mean, there's nothing more fun than that for us. So I had a blast, and we played well, and it was a lot of fun. But it was interesting because we got in a conversation on the course, and before we played the second round, you said to me, listen to this. You said, you got to. Yep. And so before we get into all that, the title of this podcast is We Can't Make This Shit Up. Right. We can't make this shit up. That's right. Going to be the title of this podcast, because there's some stuff that we deal with in this company that I never thought, and I know you never thought, that we'd own a golf company teaching people the joy of playing the game of golf better, that we would deal with some of the stuff we deal with. So as we roll into this, and we're going to play this clip for you, but Tim says, listen to this. And you played this clip of this recording, and I'm sure we'll have to bleep out the guy's name and in his phone number, because he puts it on there. And so that'll all be bleeped out. But yeah, we listened to it, and we're just like, what in the hell? And then we played it for the group of guys we were with, who were all industry guys.
Good friends of mine.
But so let's play the clip.
Well, you know, I'll set it up because, first of all, I'll do a podcast. We'll flip this podcast here shortly. The next one I do will be about our rounds out there, because, you know, there's a lot of good stuff to talk about in those rounds. Yeah. And we had a couple guys we played with that were like just going in awe on our caddy that we had out at, you know, Cascada. I mean, we will talk about that. So we'll flip this thing.
We need to flip this into the Feeling of Greatness podcast. Yeah. So we'll flip the story here, but we got to play this part first.
Well, we're going to do this. Yeah. This podcast will be about our stories that, you know, you can't make this shit up. Okay. but you know, if you think about it, we'd played the first day already. We'd played at the TPC course. And the second day we went to Cascada. And anybody who knows about Vegas, or some, maybe a few guys out there had seen this course, but all I've been told was it's outside of Vegas. It's one of the most beautiful courses you've ever seen in your life. And I mean, it's literally got a waterfall that goes through the pro shop.
There's a waterfall in the golf, in the clubhouse.
In the clubhouse. I mean, literally a full waterfall that runs off the mountain or whatever you call it, that goes through the clubhouse. I mean, what do you think they paid for that clubhouse?
I said $50 million, but it could be more.
Could be. I mean, it's just crazy. Yeah. And so we would drive up to this place and they treat us like 5-star. I mean, you know, you go to the bag drop, they're treating you first class. This is an annual deal that...
Yeah, you got
to
go there.
And the reason we go to this tournament is because, number one, we support our club, because they bring all the clubs in Oklahoma City and surrounding areas, they bring in teams. They want to bring in about a dozen teams. So there's usually 70 to 80 teams out there. And for years, Oaktree National would just bring a bunch of the real older guys out there, and they just get crushed. I mean, and so they just get run over because they're good, tough golf courses.
Yeah.
So our pro, Steve Kimmel, who is now retired, but at the golf course, came to us and said, hey, I want to bring some of the younger guys. We're in their 50s. We're very young, but some guys that can play, because I want to be competitive out there. And it's an individual team deal. But so we went out there and supported them three years ago. We started doing this 3 years ago. But they'll bring you to different courses every year. And when they're bringing these courses, they're trying to wine and dine you, get to nice, because they want you to come back the next year. And it's not cheap. It's not a cheap deal you're playing. But so you're at this place. You're in Vegas. You're at a beautiful golf course, one of the prettiest golf courses we're going to ever play.
Yeah.
We drive up, and it was a little chilly out, okay, but we're looking forward to a great round of golf. We're going to have some good guys we're playing with, have a lot of fun. And I'm literally walking, and this is honest to gosh truth. You'd taken off up, we'd driven up and dropped at the bag drop, and you'd walked in to go grab a snack, and I'd kind of dropped the car off. And I'm literally walking through this $50 million pro shop or $50 million clubhouse watching this waterfall, and I get a text that comes in from one of my staff members. So David Cotter sends me this text, because he had just gotten to work and he had just opened up the messages from the night before, the emails or the messages the night before. And so I hit play, and I'm like, I didn't know what it was. Dave goes, you got to listen to this. And so I hit play, And so I'm walking through this $50 million facility, one of the best facilities ever I'm ever going to see, and probably one of the prettiest facilities I've ever seen in my life, by far.
Yeah,
and
you're having this surreal moment.
Oh, no, it's not even close.
You're enjoying the reason we're there.
In fact, I was looking for you because we're about to building our facility, and I'm like, we can't even afford the brickwork in this.
I was like,
we're
building a shack.
Yeah, we're building a shack compared to this place.
Yeah,
and so then I hit play on this thing, and this is what I hear.
Yeah. Okay, let's play it.
Okay.
I'm calling because you're a piece of shit. Pretty much. My phone number is, and my name is, and I just paid you $60 for nothing because you're a piece of shit. So my phone number is, and if you don't fucking call me back for your goddamn thing, I'm going to come down there to Arizona and kill you.
Now, this is the Feeling of Greatness podcast. There's nothing that feels good about that message. And here's the thing. Before you go, because listen, if you get charged $60 and you're that upset that you'll come kill us for it, you shouldn't play golf because golf is going to kick your ass.
Yep.
Golf's too hard. I've never said this before, but I will say this, and I've never encouraged anybody to quit the game of golf. Like I'm an inspiring person. I want people to love joy and love the game and play it. And because it's hard, and that guy needs to quit the game. He needs to stop playing. I think that I'm going to finally in my life have one person say, please don't play the game of golf. First of all, I don't want to run into you on the golf course. There's no place that's going to give you joy. Right. Cascada won't give this guy joy.
Right. Well, we'll get into the topic now, but you know, we'll get into some other stuff that we've had to deal with because it's these guys.
Well, that was your second death threat for the week.
For the week. Yeah.
The other one was over some clubs.
Yeah, the other one was I had a gentleman who I was dealing with overseas who hadn't bought one thing from us ever. He was a $0.00 customer. He got a free club fitting, and he started in like a typical situation. He sent in a club fitting. I responded back to him and said, hey, this is what your length, angle, shaft length needs to be in your club. So we talked and we started going back and forth in emails. And we literally went 56 emails into this conversation over about 2 weeks.
I saw them.
Yeah. You know, you got them. And I mean, literally where it was like, he'd sit there and say, I have this set. It's this length, this angle, this shaft flex, this grip. I need you to build this every club. What's every, you know, so he's not going to buy a thing from us, which is okay. But he starts saying, I want to know. And then he starts talking like, I have this wedge and it's 1 degree off and I want this and this. And then, and we went back and forth. And finally, after 56 emails, I just had to stop it. And I just said, I emailed him back and I said, if you would like, well, it was about 50 into it. I said, if you want more help, you've got to become an active participant with this. I said, I can't do this. I can't take this much time. I said, I have hundreds and or literally thousands of customers and students who I'm trying to help. And you literally, every time I send an email, he's firing right back. Okay. And so he wrote back to me and said, oh yeah, I'm going to become a member of the Single Plan Academy. I said, great. So I contacted Shane Mattson, our guy. And I said, this guy's going to be contacting you. And I said, here's his email. And then I went back to this gentleman and I said, here's the link to sign up for the online, the Single Plan Academy.
Right.
You know, sign up monthly if you want. And he wrote back to me, said, well, I'm thinking about doing it in the future. I might do it in the future.
We get that a lot.
Yeah. And he goes, I didn't tell you I was going to do it. I might do it in the future. And I said, okay. And I said, then we're good. And I wrote, we're good. And I wrote that in an email. I said, we're good. And then he wrote back to me. He said, was that sarcastic? I said, no. I said, we're good. Like, we're done. Like, it's okay. And then he wrote me a long 2-paragraph email again, wanting another set built over there. And I said, we're done. I said, I can't do this anymore. And you saw those emails.
Yeah, saw the whole stream.
Yeah. And I said, we can't do this anymore. I cannot spend this much time on this anymore. And that's when he wrote back to me and said, and he obviously looked at our blog or our history online because I know he wouldn't know this, but he told me he hoped that me, my wife, and my son died.
Yeah.
That's what he wrote in there. Yeah. And so he had to see that on our, where we have our stuff online.
So first of all, I just want to put this out there. It's a felony.
Yeah.
these are felonies, by the way. Yeah. I mean, and look, I take this stuff pretty seriously. Look, I don't want to watch my back when I fly into Phoenix to teach a golf school. Yeah. And I don't want you to have to watch your back when you're running around because we travel a lot. And listen, I'll just say this. Where has this expectation level gone to where you give somebody something for free and you give them advice and they take it to the extreme of you owe them everything?
It's crazy. It's absolutely crazy. You know, well, we're going to say the funniest part, though, that there was the total humor because The funniest part
on the tee box.
On the tee box,
yeah.
Because me and you, Todd and I, were in the lead group of the tournament the second day, and Todd played good, and we had played decent the first day, so we got in basically the lead group. And the group right behind us was all the pros that took care of us. So it's all my buddies. These are guys I play with twice a month. I've known for 50 years. I mean, my buds. And so we get up in that one little short par three, and we got like three groups in the tee, and they'd come up and join us. And we're just talking, and one of them had made a comment. It said something to you, and you go, you got to hear this.
Yeah. It's, well, our team, we had played this while our partners were playing with us.
Right.
And when we got on the tee, they said, you guys got to hear this message.
Yeah, because we were going to bring it up to
them. Yeah, we were going to bring it up.
So Todd pulls out the phone, and we're waiting. We had a 10-minute or 15-minute wait, and he plays it. And one of the pros, Tim Fleming, one of my best friends, goes, that's not real. And I said, yeah, this is real. He couldn't believe, first of all, he couldn't believe it was real. And he's been a head pro of a course forever.
Yeah.
And he's an exceptionally good player. But Fleming goes, and another one of our buddies goes, Devin Davenport, who Todd, me and you are like our best friends with. Devin looked at Todd and he goes, that's real? And Todd goes, yeah. And it's the second one that you, Tim's got.
I go, Tim's had two of those this week.
And Devin looked at me and goes, that's okay. It's only Tuesday.
It's only Tuesday.
like we got time for more.
Oh my God.
But you know, it's fascinating the blame they put on other people and the non, and here's interesting, you know, and I'll give this story and it's going to take a couple minutes, but this is the thing that's fascinating. That was really eye opener for me. And this happened years ago with us. And I think
let me tell you another, I'll tell you another story.
Okay.
And it happened this morning.
Yeah.
Okay. This morning. But this is daily. I don't want to sound like this stuff's a one-off.
Right.
Like this is daily stuff.
Right.
Everybody in this team is dealing with. We got how many? 15 people on this team.
Oh yeah.
Everybody's dealing with this stuff. So I don't want this to sound like, oh my God, this happened to Todd.
Right.
But I get an email last night of a guy who's complaining about one of the training clubs. Here's what he does. He buys the wrong product.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So he hits the buy button.
Mm-hmm.
We ship him the wrong product. October last year.
Mm-hmm.
He gets the product. It's the wrong product. What should he be done? He should put it back in the box, ship it back, refund you the money, credit your account, whatever. No problem. He opens the product, hits the product, last week wants to return it. So what is it, 6 months later?
6 months, yeah.
Okay, 6 months later. Mm-hmm. And our team is instructed, no, you can't take returns. Now he's mad.
Mm-hmm.
Now he's mad. So he calls me and he said, I'm really disappointed in your company that you didn't return this product. I'm like, We would have to throw it in the trash. You hit it. It's not new. I can't resell it. You should have returned in October. He's mad at our company for this. So then he buys a Perfect Impact trainer. All right. And he opens it up and he says, well, this one was already damaged. Now, I don't know if it was or not. It could have been. I mean, I doubt it. He sent me a picture of it. Doesn't look like something that had shrink wrap on it when we get it from our manufacturer. I would have certainly sent it back to our manufacturer. Mm-hmm. I said, I'll be happy. If you haven't hit that club, I'd be happy to return that club. But my point is that daily, our team is overwhelmed with customer stuff. We're not a perfect company, right? But it's amazing what people will expect from us as a company. This is amazing.
Well,
it's amazing. And by the way, you just paid $8 for that cup of coffee this morning at Starbucks. Go bitch at them, you know, for what you paid for that.
So this was probably 7 or 8 years ago. No, it's probably about 12 or 13 years ago now. Maybe longer. We've been this over a long time. And we have a school in Connecticut. And you remember this. This was, and you were a small part of this, but it's a 5-day camp. And they were running in Connecticut. At that time, me and you were both doing the 5-day camp. So it wasn't an alumni camp. It was a regular 5-day camp. And the first day we had a normal camp was in Connecticut. Anybody's been there at Fox Hop Yard, and we did the schools there. It's a beautiful facility. Most beautiful facilities we were at. But anyway, we had a normal camp. So we start up the first day, the first morning of the 5-day camp. And you weren't there. I was there with the staff and we're running the camp. And everything's going good. Everything's working great. We have our normal little classroom meeting in the morning, the first day, and we're rolling through it like normal. Nothing to, write home about, nothing unusual. We go putt the first day. So we go out to the green to putt the first day. And when we get there on the green, which is just right outside the classroom, I think we had like 18 or 19 students. We start putting, and there's a gentleman there, and he's part of the group, part of our staff,
but he won't participate.
He won't participate. He's just standing there. He's standing on the edge of the green.
He's paid full price. Full price to be there.
He's a normal student from New York City.
Right.
Okay. And he's just standing there. And so I walk up to him. So I went through the fundamentals. And I remember this is like it was yesterday. In fact, I remember his face. It was that long, and I still remember his face. And I walked up to him and said, hey, after we had gone through the fundamentals, everybody's out putting on their own, and we're sitting there helping them individually and so on. He's not participating. So I said, do you want to hit some putts? Do you want to participate in your own? So like, I think he's kind of lost. He goes, no, I'm good. I just want to stand here. I said, okay. So he just stands there. And so like 20 minutes into it, my staff member walks up there and says, this gentleman's not, you know, he looks at me and goes, is he okay? And I said, yeah. And he goes, well, he's not doing anything. He's just standing there. I said, yeah, I've already asked him. At that time, I asked him twice. And he said, he just wanted to watch. I said, okay. So we went through the putting. We went to lunch. After lunch, we go out and we did on grip and setup. Okay. Went through the same thing, went through the classroom setting, the jazz, we went out on the range. And we said, we went through grip setup. He sat in his chair the entire time. We had those chairs sitting there. He wouldn't come out of his chair. So he just sat in his chair. And same thing. We went up to him a couple of times, said, hey, you know, can we help you? You know, are you okay? You know, think about it. You got 18 people standing in the line. You're working with them diligently and five or six staff members go up another line and he's just sitting in a chair watching us. He said, no, I just want to watch. He said, okay. We're like, well, maybe this guy, you know, maybe he's got physical issues, whatever. Okay. So day one hits, we're done, we're over. We go to day two. Day two starts, same thing. We have a classroom-like setting. And he said, and the interesting part is he hadn't said a word. So day two, we have a classroom. It's a Q&A session, and it's a very open session. So everybody's in there, and they're asking questions the day before. They're asking upcoming questions. They're asking all kinds of great stuff. And we usually have to cut it off after an hour because it's so busy. You know what I'm saying? And he just sits there and doesn't say a word. Not a word. We're okay. So then we go out and we chip. We start chipping, and he does exactly the same thing we did in the putting green. We went through the fundamentals, and then we started going into the chipping. He just stood there. And I remember asking like two or three times, are you okay? And I remember saying, do I want to bring you a chair? Like, do you want to sit in a chair? Because he wasn't going to participate. And I knew it was obvious that he wasn't. He goes, no, I just want to watch. He goes, I'm good. So I'm thinking, well, maybe this guy's a guy that doesn't want to do, he just wants to watch. So I'm like, it's kind of odd. Okay. Haven't had that before, but okay. So we go through the chipping session and we're done. Well, you arrive at lunch on the second day. That's when you come in. And so we went up to the classroom. We ate lunch. We went up in the back upstairs. We went and ate lunch. And then we went back into the classroom. And the first thing you do when you get there on day two is you present the Mo model. So you have the big screen in front of us, the big projector in front of the room. And we get it all set up. And so I've released, I bring him in. And we bring him in the classroom, and Scott Renfro was running the school at the time for us. And I remember Scott introducing you and going up to the front of the classroom and said, now Todd's here. He's going to take care of you this afternoon. You know, he's going to do the Mo model. We're going to go out and work on the grit. You know, we're going to match this Mo model, yada, yada. And I'm sitting, and normally by then I've left because I'm going to go somewhere and go work.
And this guy is standing in the back of the room.
He's standing in the back of the room because he just sits standing in the back of the room. Okay. And I remember, for some reason, and I don't know why to this day, but I went to the back of the room and sat down. Normally I'd leave, because I do the mornings, do the afternoon sessions, but I sat in the back of the room and maybe it was my sixth sense. I don't know. And Scott was there. He had introduced you and he went and sat.
Not a small guy.
No, Scott's a big guy. Yeah. He came and sat by me. Right. Okay. And the second he introduced you and you went up front, you got up in front of the classroom and you started to present Mo model. This guy just went off and he started attacking you. From the back of the room, and he started asking you, sort of just like, remember, if you remember this, and he started, 100%. He started asking you these really in-depth questions about the Mo swing.
He started going, well, if you think this is so great, why you're telling me, and he just started going, I mean, just total negativity.
It was unbelievable.
Why would you ever, and you know, no, he started making statements. There's nothing better about this than blah, blah, blah. And he started just going into it.
No, he started going off.
Yeah.
And you did a great job trying to control it, saying, oh, I'll cover that. I'm going to cover why we do that. We can cover that. And he just goes.
Because my deal is to protect all the students that are there.
And it was very interesting because you were trying to call. You didn't know him from Adam.
I was confused.
Because I'd seen him for 2 days. I knew this guy. Okay, something was off with this thing. And then he started attacking. Like literally getting closer. Mm-hmm. And if you remember this, he started moving up, getting closer, and you could see the students got really uncomfortable. And I remember looking at Scott, and Scott looked at me, and we knew this guy was a different duck anyway, but we didn't know he had come firing at you.
Yeah.
And I mean, and it was literally an attack session now. And I remember, and you didn't know what to do. You were kind of like, you sat there like, okay, do I handle this one guy? You're in front of this classroom.
Yeah, normally people that show up for a golf school that have paid full price are there because they want to be there.
Right.
That's just an assumption I make.
It was blatantly obvious this guy had tried this and he was putting 1,000,000% blame on you and me that this wasn't working for him. And he had paid thousands of dollars to come fire at you. Fire at you.
Okay. I'll give you another story.
Well, but if you remember what happened then, I looked at Scott and I gave him the slashing sign. I said, get rid of this guy. So Scott physically moved this guy. Remember that? Because the guy wasn't going to leave the room.
Yeah.
And Scott physically pushed him out the door. Him.
Yeah. Says, you got to go.
And we said,
you got to go.
Because the class and the guys in the classroom were just freaking out.
It's time for you to go. And he just grabbed him, pulled him out.
Pulled him out the door.
And the door was close to him.
Yeah. We walked him out the hallway. And the guy said, you have no right to do this. And I said, I have every right to do this. And I walked him down the stairs and walked on the tee. And he said, and I remember, this is the only reason I knew this. He said, you know, I'm here from New York City and I have no right. I'm going to be here for the party. I said, great. I said, in the pro shop, and there's been instructed to let you play golf if you're interested. And there's the range. You'll be hitting balls on the other side of the range, but you are done with our school. And we refunded his money. And if you remember that, and I remember he literally, we were scared. We literally thought about do we have to call the police? Do we have to, because he was there with us. Yeah. You know, it was crazy. But
I remember, so I got two stories, but one was, I flew all the way to Australia to launch our Australia version of our academy. And Blade and Ron, who had set the academy up there, and I was going to do a ball striking exhibition. Now, I just had flown in the day before. We got, you know, there's probably 100 people there. It's really a nice setup. They got kind of a bleacher set up, and they got, you know, they have a sponsor, car sponsors, and there's flags blowing, and, you know, I'm at there, I have the range set up, and I'm getting ready to do an exhibition. And, you know, I'm doing my thing. Mm-hmm. I've hit some shots, and from the back, this guy screams, yeah, but he'll rip you off $69. And he screams it as loud as he can. And I'm like, really? And so even the people in the crowd were sitting up going, they're going, hey, if you got a problem with this business, this is not the place, because we're here to be do this clinic and thing. And he's just going off, and he has his girlfriend next to him. So I get attacked there too.
Yeah.
Did I ever think that going running around teaching Moe's swing, I'd be attacked everywhere I went?
Yep.
Oh my God. What is going on in this world?
Well, Coffee Creek Golf Course. You remember this one very well. And then we could talk about things going on, but we had a school at Coffee Creek, and we were on the chipping green. It was the second day of the school. And the first day of the school, we had done putting and everything had gone well and so on. And the second day of the school, there was a gentleman who came in, and he wasn't there the first day. And so he comes in late to the school. He was a bigger guy. And I mean, I can remember him like it was yesterday too. And we're on the green chipping, and I'd give him the fundamentals, and I'll never forget this because I remember he was standing underneath that shade tree up by the green. And I walked up over to him. And when I started working with his chipping, I started adjusting his grip, adjusting his setup, doing the normal deal. And he took a chip back. And I don't know if he shanked it or he didn't hit a good shot, but I made some adjustment. He hit a bad shot. And I helped him again. And when the second time I helped him, he dropped his club. He turned towards me because I was kind of standing behind him. He pointed his finger. And I remember he touched my nose, and he pointed his finger to my nose. And he said, if this hurts my game, I'm going to kill you.
Wow.
And I remember, and I look at it, and when that first happens, you think it's a joke.
Wow.
Because it's so, you know what I'm saying? And remember, he hit my nose with his finger.
Oh, that's insane.
And I remember I backed off him because you don't know how to react. I remember he was a big guy, really big guy.
Oh.
And he was just fuming. He's just fuming. I don't know because he shanked one or what it was. He's just fuming. And I remember working the next guy. And he basically did to one of our staff members also. The staff member, because I walked away from him, I came over and helped him. And he didn't threaten him, but he went after one of our staff members. And if you remember this, I walked back to the academy because we're going to lunch after that. And I walked back down to the academy and I came to you and I said, this guy's got to go. He's got to go.
Yeah.
Because remember, they went that. And you went, and so we drug him into my office in the academy and you met me in there. Remember this?
Yeah.
And we said, you've got to leave. The students don't want you here. We don't want you here.
You're making threats.
And you remember, he said, and you asked him, why did you do that? And he said, I was testing you. Do you remember this? He goes, it was a test. And I said, wrong test.
Yeah.
Remember that? He goes, I was testing you under pressure. I want to see how you'd react under pressure.
Oh, Lord.
Remember that? I'll never forget him saying that. He goes, I want to see how you'd react under pressure. I was like, you got to be kidding me.
Yeah.
Remember when he gave him money, he went home.
Yeah.
It's crazy. It's crazy.
Yeah, you know, I just don't get it. I think I'm pretty naive to this crap usually. Yeah. I mean, usually I'm just doing my thing and stuff catches me by surprise. And I'm not wired for it. I'm really not wired for it. You know, I just don't expect it that much.
Well,
I don't want to be a part of it. Like I run like the wind. Like if you come to our golf schools, I'll just make a point. Cause if anybody's listening to this podcast that's coming to our schools, I'll say this right now. And this is just human nature and life. So this isn't about golf schools. If you want to attract people to you, be effing nice to people. I'm just saying it's not common sense.
I know.
Because look, if you're watching our tee line, like we monitor our tee line, like when we're watching the schools, and our instructors will naturally, by human nature, it's not even on purpose, will gravitate towards the students that are being the most appreciative.
Yep.
And some of you guys that come to our golf schools think, well, I'm embarrassed because I hit it bad. We don't care if you're the worst golfer in the world. We don't care if you don't even know how to grip the golf club. None of that stuff matters one single bit. What matters is if you're a nice human.
Yep.
And we want to spend time with a nice human being, and we'll help you in any way we can. It has absolutely nothing to do with how good a golfer you are. And so, you know, people, when I remember we at golf schools, I remember this one guy was so nice and so appreciative. Yep. And our eyes looked down there and half of our team staff is standing next to him, working with him, wanting to work with him. Right. We wanted to work with that person. Then you got Mr. Negativity down on the other yep. side and no one will go near him. And remember Jared?
Yep.
So we had an instructor, Jared Knatzer, and Jared had a term for it. He'd go, that student's dead to me yep. because he didn't want to work with him anymore. Right. He's like, he's just too negative. And then people get on life support. Like yeah. that one's on life support. Yeah. Cause we'd walk in the line.
He'd walk by us in line and say, so-and-so's on life support.
Yeah. But look, if you gotta be open at a golf school and you gotta be, if you're there for instruction, you're there to get help. And if you're so closed off not to get the help, I don't know why you're there.
Well, it's interesting because the first day of the school, every school, throughout the camp, 3 days of school, we call what's called the level expectation talk. The level of expectation talk.
Yeah.
And it's all about trying to get these guys and gals just to have fun,
yeah.
to enjoy the experience, because we're going to have a blast. We're not going to be there beating each other up.
Yeah, but I'll tell you something right now, Tim. No one listens.
Oh, no, they don't.
I mean, this is the podcast. We can talk about whatever we want yeah. here. People are I'm bad at it, too. I'm guilty of this, mm-hmm. too. We're bad listeners. We're bad at taking instruction. Mm-hmm. We have a preconceived thing in our mind of the way it should be. And if it doesn't match our expectation, we're pissed off right. at it. I catch myself all the time in my own mind doing the same thing. I don't care what, Tim, you say some of the information you've given out at golf schools, not only from the very beginning to your short game instruction and all the stuff you mm-hmm. do, right? How much of it gets listened to?
Oh, I know. We're lucky of 10%. I know.
10%.
But, you know, it's interesting because it's amazing how, you know, one of the things we do at the start of every one of our golf schools, one of the things we do, and we make the people in the school, and anybody who's alumni of our school knows what has heard this before, but we literally say this. We make the entire class say this at one time and says, realize results of golf shots do not affect self-worth. So realize results of golf shots do not affect self-worth.
Yeah.
And we do that because it is amazing. Because here's what happens. It's typically a guy issue. You get a guy who's come to another school who's frustrated. He's frustrated with this game. That's why he's coming to see us. He's probably hurting a little bit, whether it's backs, hips, whatever. So he's frustrating and hurting a little bit. He's coming to find us. And, you know, how many times have we heard, this is the last hope. This is the last hope. You know, like, if I can't figure it out with you guys, I'm going to quit.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's kind of our MO.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden they come out there and we adjust something with them or do something. They hit a bad shot. Well, the problem is you're standing behind them as an instructor that you just did it and you're taking the wrath. So if that result of that golf shot affects his self-worth, he flips around and you're taking the wrath.
Here's what'd be interesting to do this. So you and I, let's talk about a range session that you and I are working together.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So we're teaching each other, right? You're watching me hit balls. I'm watching you hit balls and we're asking each other for advice and check this out.
We do all the time.
We do this all the time. Yep. This is some fun we have, but it's also very learning because you need objectivity, right? I can't see what I'm doing wrong. You can't see what you're doing wrong. Let's talk about, like, you and I are having a normal range session mm-hmm. and I'm hitting it like shit.
Mm-hmm.
And tell me how that goes, because I don't think people realize what actually when we're working through it, mm-hmm. we don't care.
Right.
We're like, I need to get the ball position right, or I need to fix my backswing, whatever it is.
Two things. Number one, the person who's hitting typically, you care that you want to hit it better, but you know that there's going to be a solution somewhere. You're going to come up with the solutions. It's almost like it's not a game. It's like a challenge. It's more like a challenge. You're going to figure this thing out. Okay. Cause number one, you've hit it well before, so you know it's there. Number two is you're trying to find that what's going on. That's number one. Number two is you got one choice. You got two choices. Number one, when you hit a bad shot, you either can laugh about it or you can get pissed off about it. Okay. You got two choices. We'll talk about this in AI school.
You can learn from it.
You can, and if you get pissed off from it, you're not going to learn from it.
Right.
You're not going to learn. It's almost like the fight and flight thing, but you're not going to learn. You're going to just think about being pissed off, the adrenaline. So if you want to learn from it, you've got to either laugh about it or just accept it. Okay. And so when we go out there and we're working with each other and we've hit some god awful shots, I mean, we're trying to make adjustments and so on. When you hit that terrible shot, you just laugh. It's like we laugh at each other. Mm-hmm. It's almost like how bad can you actually hit it before? So it turns into kind of a funny deal. It's interesting because you'll take a student, like I'll work with you, and let's say you got the ball position 3 feet too far forward in your stance, whatever the issue is, or something's going on, I make an adjustment, and that first couple come off sideways. And we just laugh at each other. You know, it's like, oh yeah, I got you to hit it that bad. You know, I got you to hit that bad.
Yeah.
I accomplished what I need you to do. I want you to hit that bad.
But the mindset is, I trust your advice.
100%.
I need your help. can you take a look at me? And because I can't figure this out.
And take it one step past the mindset of trust, because it's the conversation with our students all the time. It's you know, when we went Ron Cruikshank one time, you know, who's the sports psychologist who worked with us, or, you know, Blade's dad. And Ron, one time we say, what's the perfect student? He says, it's real easy. It's a student that only answers one word to you. Okay.
Okay. Okay. Well, it's the other thing too is we used to teach golf schools and we used to ask people's permission.
Right.
Like, do we have the permission to change your golf swing? Right. Do we have the permission to make you feel uncomfortable? Do we have the permission to do the things that we know as coaches we need to do to get you better?
Right.
And that almost says, yeah, you have permission to make me uncomfortable. Because that's what sometimes I think we run into is people have not given us permission. Just like the guy that pointed at your face.
It's that, but it's also, it's what you do with online. It's the emails like we talked about earlier. Every time you get in these conversations, these extended conversations, whether it's in person or whether it's on email, you quickly realize there's no trust there, or you've had a lack of 100%. Trust. Because it's like this gentleman I dealt with overseas, went 50-some emails. 20 emails into it, I realized he didn't trust me.
Right.
There's no doubt. I mean, because he's asking me these loaded questions like, why would you do that? Why would you do this? And I'm like, and then you got the guys who email me and like, I trust whatever you do.
So we could roll this back because we had these conversations and we had this long conversation about this while we played golf mm-hmm. that day. But then we have students like Bill and students that we mentioned
right.
that come up to us and say, you guys have created an amazing experience right. here. It's such a great golf school. You guys have such a great team of guys around you. You've created such a cool thing here to experience and just express so much appreciation for what we're doing. And those, that makes my day. Like we get that too. So I'm not saying we get all that.
We get that more.
We get that more. But it's just like, how do you go from one extreme to the other with people? You know, some people are just unhappy.
It's a 90-10 rule. 90% of the time we get, or much more than that, we get the appreciation and the trust. Yeah. And that's what we can do. What we still do. We're doing this for 25 years plus. And we have great, you know, customers out there. We've got great, you know, members out there. I mean, phenomenal. In fact, that's why I do it.
It's funny because this morning I got an email from City of Edmond about some zoning crap going on, right, with our new deal. Right. And it was very frustrating for me to get this email because I've been dealing with this and answered it multiple times to the city. And there's a lady named Sandy that works inside the city planning commission. And I thought, you know, if I call her and I'm gonna go, gosh dang it, Sandy, and just rip her apart for this thing, I know it's gonna create a chain of events that I'm not gonna solve it.
Yep.
So I said that I can go that way with it, which is the way I felt at the moment. But then I said, no, you know what I'm gonna do? I'm gonna call Sandy and go, hey Sandy, what can we do to figure this out? Can you help me out here? Because I'm really frustrated with this. And I don't know what to do. And I called her up and that's what I said. I said, Sandy, I really need your help with this. I just don't know what to do, how to take it. She goes, oh, I can handle this. And then 3 seconds, she's like, I'll take care of it, Todd. Yep. Appreciate your call. It matters.
Yep.
Right. It freaking matters. Well,
and this is in our organization, and those that are listening to this know, a lot of them know our organization, but this is why when people come into our staff, when people come in our new staff, I say, you have to learn one thing in this company. And this is the one saying you've got to know and you got to memorize. If Tanya's happy, we're happy.
Yeah.
So I said, if Tanya's front lines. Tanya is our answer in the phone, front line.
Tanya's front lines, and she has to have a nerves of steel.
And she has to, she's a godsend because she literally.
I don't know how she does it.
I don't either, because it's amazing how things just roll off Tanya. Because,
I called her this morning about that guy with the club. Yeah, it's just, she has nerves of steel.
Yeah, it's unbelievable because the amount of calls she gets in the day and just gets lit up from, and she just calms it down, takes it on. Again, she's our savior. Beyond this, she's a front line. She's actually our front and our second line. Because I guarantee you over 90% of the stuff never gets through just because Tanya just handles it.
Here's what I said to you though. It was pretty funny. So this guy's mad about the, about the $60 and the guy in Australia. And I'm like, hey, you hit the buy button.
I know.
I mean, you took that action, right? I didn't go to your computer, run into your house and go, you're buying this without,
I know.
They hit the buy button, right? So it's like, take responsibility a little bit for your actions. And look, we'll solve it. We're a company. We're not perfect, but we'll solve your issues.
I know.
We'll go above and beyond. But it's so interesting. Yeah. Hey, let's flip it.
Okay.
Let's flip the conversation. Well, you wanted to talk about Vegas playing.
Yeah. Yeah. So you want to go.
Was that a separate podcast or was that this podcast?
A separate podcast. We're going to a different one because we're going to do a different podcast because we want to get into that with you. And we'll have a different podcast about the plane round up there.
Yeah. So. Yeah. No, but people, I'm telling you. So, I mean, I just have some advice on this podcast. I mean, the advice is treat people. I mean, look, we all have bad days. Right. So maybe this guy had a really bad day. I wouldn't threaten to kill somebody on my bad day, but yeah. I might threaten to, I wouldn't even threaten to hurt somebody. I'd just get mad. But, but man, if you're having a bad day, you need to sit down, grab a cup of coffee or grab your favorite beverage, look at a sunset, pet your dog, grab a dog. I mean, just play with your dog. I mean, nothing's more peaceful than that. He's going to have fun. I mean, find some way that you can go back and reset yourself. Have a little reset button that you press on the side of your head that just says, man, you know, my child, don't let my childhood affect my adulthood here. And because I called that guy a child when he did that. I said, that guy's still a five-year-old. He's still got some five-year-old issues going on there. But you know, people have to take responsibility for how they feel. And don't let that affect the people around you, you know. But yeah, hurting other people is not a smart thing to do.
Well, and the other thing is that golf's supposed to be a game of fun. I mean, that's supposed to be a game of leisure. It's supposed to be a game of relaxation. It's supposed to be a game that you can take stress out.
We played with that caddy, right? Yeah. So we had a really good caddy. Really fun caddy at Cascada. Pat was a piece of work. And Pat
was actually, here's the interesting thing about Pat. And we'll talk about it in the next podcast.
We got to mention Pat here.
We'll give Pat a shout out in a couple podcasts. Yeah. But Pat was a 57-year-old caddy who had been caddying out there for like 15 or 16 years. But Pat, if you looked at his face, looked like he was about 70.
Yeah.
Because Pat had...
He's worn out.
And he'd walked mountains. He's like a mountain goat twice a day for 15 or 16 years.
Yeah.
I mean, every single day. I mean, and this course was up and down. I mean, dramatic.
Yeah.
But anyway, Pat, he heard this conversation. He heard the recording.
Well, Pat said, he goes, it's amazing because he found out we're from Oklahoma.
Right, right.
And he said, I love dealing with guys from the Midwest because they just take it easy out here and they have a good time. And he goes, but man, sometimes people that I caddy for, when they're so angry when they play, they walk off the course. I'm like, is this really your form of leisure and entertainment?
he goes, I'll get done the round and ask him this.
Is this really your form of leisure and entertainment?
He goes, after they've thrown three clubs and cussed everybody out, he goes, you really enjoying yourself out here?
And you know what's worse about golf, though, is people beat themselves up. Like, if you're willing to beat yourself up, you're going to beat other people up.
But think about this, Todd. On a scale, okay, you've played a lot of golf courses, I have, okay? A lot of golf courses, right? And we go to Cascada. On a scale of 1 out of 10 for beauty, what would you say that course was?
It's a 10.
It's a 10, okay? You can't beat that, can you? Okay, I mean,
you're not going to find a better place.
It isn't in Las Vegas.
And the reason you liked it is because you're on a hole and you're isolated from all their holes. It's the only hole you can see.
In fact, if you had to walk this golf course, a typical golf course you walk is like 5 miles, 6 miles.
You couldn't walk this course.
This was probably 14 miles.
Yeah, this one's a 5.5 hour round because there's such long distances between the holes.
From the green. It was just unbelievable. Yeah. Every hole was its own scene. It was scenery. It was unbelievable.
Yeah, it's true. It's a picture.
And I will tell you right now, I probably maybe one or two courses in my life ever played it more breathtaking than this. And Pat's telling you about these guys that went out there and they're probably paying.
And they're miserable.
I mean, I don't know what green fees out there because
probably $400, $300 or $400.
Or higher.
Or, yeah.
And they're going out there paying all this money to get in this golf course and they're literally miserable because they're taking.
I don't understand.
Yeah. Isn't it amazing? It's amazing. That just blows. And here's the problem. When we got in the first tee and we hit our shots off the tee and those two guys we play with, which are good players, also hit their shots off the tee. What's the first thing Pat said to us? He looked at us because he knows.
He goes, thank God.
He goes, thank God. And we looked at him. He goes, thank God. He goes, normally I'm in the rocks looking for pinnacles all day. He goes, I'm in the rocks looking for pinnacles all day.
Yeah.
I mean, because this is, you're off the fairway, you're in the rocks.
Yeah.
And he goes, thank God. And he goes, oh, this is going to be a blast. So not only is he's caddying for guys that aren't very good anyway. And then they're just throwing a fit and going crazy
Why, you know, one thing that was cool about Pat is he had developed just this great personality to be able to deal with the adversity that goes on out there.
Yeah.
And so he had like little jokes and little fun things. You got this figured out. You know, like you could be up against a rock. He's like, we got this.
He'd
bang it in the rocks again. Yeah. He goes, I thought we had it. That's my fault.
He'd take
the total blame for it. Yeah. Yeah, it was really funny.
But it was really funny though. When we all hit the first tee. He looked and he goes, thank God.
Thank God. I finally can have a day where I can walk down the fairway.
Yeah, yeah. Ride in the back of the cart.
Yeah.
Because he actually rode in the back of the cart with us to the next ball.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but we'll have the next podcast. We're going to talk about that because we had some comments from the guys we played with.
Yeah.
We played a couple of times now and also Pat. And I want to bring that up just about the way we handle the round and the way we play together and basically our banter.
Yeah.
Because that one gentleman from Quail Creek who we play with now at a couple of tournaments, and about the seventh or eighth hole, he came to us and he goes, I love your guys' banter. He goes, I love playing with you guys. And I go, what do you mean? He started talking to me about it. Yeah. And I want to bring that up in the next podcast.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll talk about that.
Okay.
Yeah. But what do you think? Why do you think that if you, on a normal day, how many emails do you answer on a normal day? Just, and I've seen not Callaway emails, not orders.
No.
Personal, like I want your help.
Well, last year Thomas asked me to count it and I averaged 226 a day. That was my average. So 226 was my average when I went through the year. I mean, and it was hard to figure that out, but that's not ones coming back into me. That's ones that I'm just sending out. So like somebody say, ask a question and I send out, it was over 225. On busy days, close to 400 or 500, slow days, maybe 100, 125. But those aren't, but now those are individuals. If they start coming back in like the 56, I don't add those together. So it's like the multiple ones.
Right.
So yeah, so it's over a couple hundred.
And these questions are about basically the fitting information that you've given them, a fitting, or they're asking about fitting.
Fitting information, typically, or maybe about, is it some instruction? If you know, we've done schools, usually it's 90% about fittings or things we're doing in clubs or their equipment. Yeah.
Let's talk about club fitting for a minute. Like, this mm-hmm. is interesting because this is where you spend a lot of your mm-hmm. universe. God, level of player matters, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So, but do you think people take, and this is, I'm totally asking this without even telling you before the podcast, mm-hmm. I was going to ask you this. Do you think people take it too far, like the spine of the shaft and the balance point of the club?
I go once or two or three times a year, but one big time deal. I go to Callaway, and I'm lucky enough to be able to spend the time with the engineers,
the best of the best.
I mean, there's no one in the world better than these guys, and they're getting paid for it. I mean, I get to go spend the time with the guys that are designing the clubs for 2 years from now, that have created the AI computers, the artificial intelligence computers that are designing these clubs. I get to go spend time. That have got, I mean, I brought you out there a few times. They got 3D machines making clubs in the background, 16 of these things running at a time. It's crazy. These guys are the best of the best.
Yeah.
And I walk in there and tell them the questions I get, like, do you pure shafts? And they start laughing at me. I tell them things like, do you spine angle shafts? They start laughing at me. Do you care about kick points and shafts? They start laughing at me. Right. And they go, Tim, this is garbage that is brought up to make money, ugh, rip off people in the industry, number one. Number two, it's stuff that people think this is what they tell me. They go, people get in the internet, they want to make themselves smart, so they write bullshit on the internet.
Yeah.
And then other people read it, and the next people read it, and it's just garbage.
Oh my God.
It's just garbage. And they sit there. And so it's funny because I'm almost embarrassed to ask them questions sometimes, because I'll sit there and say, well, you know, I had these 10 guys that said they contacted this group and they're going to spine the shafts. And they go, oh my God, if you got to spine shafts, first of all, those shafts are 30 years old. Second of all, you'd never do that. Third of all is they'd break before you had the,
it's just like crazy. How do you even spine a shaft when you're doing the adjustments on the shaft anyway?
And then they talk like, you know, like, for example, a graphite used to be made in sheets and they'd roll it and have a seam in it.
And be a spine.
Okay. And there'd be a spine. That was like 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Now it's made like a coiled, like a spring.
Right.
So there's not even spines anymore, but people still spine those things.
It's stupid.
It's the stupidest thing ever.
Well, I'm bringing this up because you have to deal with this and you have to answer these questions, and people are taking your fitting, which you've built this proprietary fitting process, unlike any process out there. And there's a lot that's gone into that.
Oh, a ton.
And not only, because I, you know, in the world of AI, which we're all diving into this AI, you're the AI for a single plane fitting.
Right.
Like, you've collected all this information and you're now taking years, 25, 30 years of club information and fitting with all the new things. And you have AI'd this process for our guys to get fit into clubs. And then you give them a recommendation.
And I'll tell you exactly how this works. I deal with this every single day. I'll get the guys' fittings online or gals' fittings online, you know, and I'll make them buy their fittings, and through an email or two or three emails, I'll make a recommendation for club head, for shaft flex, for grip, you know, the whole jazz. Okay. And I'll recommend a particular shaft for this person. That shaft recommendation was made based off the engineer who designed the club head at Callaway, and the shaft he said is the best for that club that he designed.
Exactly.
For this individual's specification. So like, cause there's, you know, different speeds, different, you know, different things. Okay. So the guy who designed the club and got the shafts together and said, this is the best
combination.
Correct. Combination. This is it. And then that gentleman, I'll be emailed, he'll sit there and say, no, I read on the internet, I want this shaft, I want this one instead. And he goes, why do you recommend that? I'm like, well, cause the guy who designed the club said, this is the best shaft for you.
Yeah.
Okay. The guy who built it. Okay, and then the guy on the internet will argue with me, no, well, John Smith down the street told me that this is a 10 times better shaft. My club fitter said this. Or, no, it's not even club fitter. I got online and I read this. I read this blog that this is better. Mm-hmm. I said, okay. And then invariably, this is what will happen. And it happens every time, Todd. He'll get the club and he'll hit it, and he'll hit his buddy's club, who was designed by the engineer that I talked to with me. And he'll go, how come I hit my buddy's club better? I'm like, really? And I'll pull out the string of emails and sit there and say, guess what? I'd recommend that shaft for you 10 times in that driver, but you wouldn't listen to me.
Yeah.
And then you know what their answer is? Well, I'm an engineer, or I'm an architect, or I'm an accountant. I got to know all the information. I got to decide for myself.
Yeah.
It's amazing how that happens.
Wow.
And I'm like, I'm not making this stuff up. I'm going to the source. I'm literally going to the source.
Well, you're pulling the information from the guys who built the equipment.
Built equipment.
Yeah.
The guy, that's why. And here's the interesting part that I can do. People always ask us why we go with Callaway. You know why we go with Callaway? Because I have the same connections with Titleist, with Ping, with Cobra, and the technology in Callaway is crazy.
Yeah, it's greater.
It's greater? It's not even close.
Yeah.
It's not even close. It's crazy. Not to mention the quality, you know, how good their quality is and so on. But the technology is insane. Now, I'm not going to say 5 years, 10 years now, that somebody may catch up. Somebody may go ahead of them. We're going to stay with the highest technology.
Right.
But I'm telling you right now, because remember, Todd, we used to be the number one seller of Cobra, number one seller of Titleist,
right.
TaylorMade, and then TaylorMade, you know, got crushed. But it's the technology. It's the technology and the quality.
It's funny because speaking of like club fitting, I remember there's a story where Fred Couples, and I don't know if this is the exact story. I don't remember it that well, but somehow he found his wife's 3-wood or 5-wood and won a tournament with it. He's right. Like, I started hitting it good. People just take it too far, yep. This club fitting thing, right? I mean, they should just trust you with what you say. That's, by the way, this is how I fit clubs. Tim, I like the new Paradigm head. Can you get me a set? He goes, what head do you like? And I tell him what head. Yep. Because look of the club's important to me, and you just build them for me.
Yep, that's it.
That's it.
So my entire staff does. So think about it. I got my entire staff here, which is the creme de la creme. I mean, of single plane. I mean, they're the guys, and they redo the clubs every year, and they say, I want this and this, and they don't. I take care of everything. They literally sit there and say, give me that. All they tell me is the model. I want that.
That's the model. Apex, that's the look I want.
Yep. I want the Apex or the Paradigm. Boom. You know, it's funny because. And it's classic with you because I'll build your set. It takes a couple of weeks usually to get it in, and you get it. And then I want to be there when you open the box and hit it. And what happens every single, it's like you look at it and go, wow, the shaft looks good. I like that.
Yeah,
you
have no idea. It's all the same stuff.
You have no idea. Yeah. Well, it's funny. It's because like you did the other day, like Dr. Gil Morgan. I mean, Dr. Gil Morgan, how many events has Dr. Gil Morgan won? And then the tour.
Oh, I got it on my phone.
It's like.
I went in and took a picture of all his record.
Right.
I didn't add them up, but
right.
It's 50.
Yeah.
And then the second place finish is 75. I mean, it's just like, why he's not in the Golf Hall of Fame is beyond.
He will be. He will be, but it's just not there yet. Yeah. He will be. But so Dr. Gil Morgan, and we hit balls with Dr. Gil, and he can't get a sweeter man. And Dr. Gil, you know, is in his 70s now, and he comes up to you, and you came to me the other day and said, get Dr. Gil a new Callaway, the new Paradigm driver. You just said this
well,
what he wants.
No, he didn't ask before. So Dr. Gil and I have become good friends, and we chat once in a while, and I like to surprise him with shit. Yeah. So because he loves the game so much, and he's 75 now, and he loves ball striking, and he calls me, because when you're gonna hit balls, I want to come out and watch you, because he had a shoulder surgery and he couldn't hit balls. I just want to come watch.
Right.
And so I just want to keep him loving the game. Right. I just want to keep playing the game.
But you got came the other day, and so you got one of the best players of all time.
Yeah.
All time. He'll be a Hall of Fame member, of course. And you called me up and goes, get a new Paradigm driver in a conversation. Great.
Yeah.
And I'll get set up for him.
Yeah. I said, get it. Right. No, I said, Dr. Gill, what loft do you want? Right. He goes, 9 or 10.
Right. Yeah.
That's it. That's his fitting. 9 or 10.
Yeah.
I'll figure it out with whatever you get me.
Yeah. And I said, great. So everything, the rest is going to be, I built for him. We'll get built. And I'm going to go, I talk to my engineers. We go and boom, we build it up. It's not a big deal.
Yeah.
So, but it's the trust. It comes back to that trust. And it's amazing. And whether how you build the trust, you gain the trust. That's why I do so many videos on club fitting, because I'm hoping these guys are self-educating themselves. But more than anything that, they can go watch your videos. I hope they're starting to trust us. So they
it's
can
trust. I mean, I totally get that part of it too. Like I totally get the trust factor in trusting us with your golf game, your equipment you pay. Right. You're spending money, a lot of money with us on golf equipment. I totally get the trust thing. Not to the point where I'll kill you, but I trust you, right? And I think it's important that, I mean, we all have to trust what's going on. And look, I want to just say this. If you got a problem, just call us, right? Don't go to our website or your email and blast us out a death threat. Just give us a call. We'll handle it.
Right.
We'll find the best way. I mean, look, Tim, I'll be honest with you. You're a lot more exposed than I am in this company. I'm sheltered behind the whole team, and I don't respond to these things. Right. If I get that... Trust me, like I told you on the golf course, I'm calling the police on that guy.
Right.
And I think the team has stopped me from doing that. But I'm like, I'm calling the police. That guy made a death threat, and I don't put up with that because I'm not going to do that kind of stuff. But again, I think trust is a big deal. I think having a way that and look, all the stuff we do is to gain people's trust.
Right.
Right. I mean, And so, but if you don't trust us, I will put this out there. Don't do business with us.
Right. There you go.
Don't click the buy button. Right.
Right?
Right. Don't harass our company. We don't need it either. And there's a part of this podcast that for you and me, just as company owners, that's why I wanted to drag you in here again, is part of me is always, and maybe this is going to sound a little bit pretentious, maybe a little bit. We have to respect people who own businesses. It's I feel like, because it is effing hard.
Yeah.
I don't think people understand what we've gone through to get the business to where it's, have we benefited from it? Yes. But Tim, you and I were dragging a trailer around for 10 years in this company, making no money,
right,
trying to figure this crap right out, trying to do what we love to do.
Right.
And now we've gotten, people don't see the shit we've been through
right
to get where we're at. And now we support a team of people and we're part of this whole group. I love the team. I love this thing. It's not effing easy. And for people to then call, make a death threat over $60, I'll tell you right now, that's bullshit, because they don't know the shit that, I don't know what that guy's been through in his life. He doesn't know what we've been through in our lives.
Right.
This crap's hard. I just want people to respect business people. Now, if you're out there and you are getting ripped off by a bunch of people, I totally get your anger, but have some freaking respect. In the business environment today is harder than it's ever been. Interest rates are increasing. The government's doing certain things. We're getting taxed out our ass. How easy would it be for us just to pack our bags? I'm done with this shit.
Oh, so easy. Well,
so easy.
How many times have you come to me on a frustrating day and said, Tim, why don't we just go teach? Let's just mean you go teach again individually. Let's just go teach. We'll just go individual teaching. You know, so what happened? Instead of us seeing thousands of people a year, we'd literally see.
I'd make more money.
Yeah, it's interesting.
I would do better.
Yeah, I know.
I know. But we run this business because we want to see the expansion of the idea.
Yep.
We want to see the legacy of Mo propagated.
Yeah, 100%.
We want to see something bigger than ourselves. We want to leave something bigger than ourselves
right
in this, right? And we're getting ready to build an academy now. And
a multi-million dollar
academy. I lose so much sleep over this. Like, I can't even keep sleeping now right now because I'm like, how the F are we going to pull this off?
Now you're going to build an academy where the people can find you.
I don't know if I'll be there very much, but yeah.
So, but it's, no, and I see that because it's amazing how many people look at it as, they don't look at the positives. They look at the negatives first, number one. Number two is they look at as all business is trying to rip you off. You know what I'm saying? And it's sad.
Internet's really created some of that, I think.
I think
you're not doing face-to-face with people.
100%. Yeah. 100%. That's the last thing we're going to do here.
Yeah.
Because we've got a bunch of good guys and gals working for us.
Well, I mean, look, I think anytime you click a buy button, anytime, how many times have you bought something from China?
Oh, yeah.
And you get this piece of shit in the mail. You know, I just spent $60 on this. I do all the time. I mean, yeah. I have a whole drawer full of crap that I'm like, I'm not going to try that again, you know? So I bought these little, for my Audi, I bought these little caps that go on your, they said they had a little Audi symbol for my wheels, and I thought they looked cool on my car, so I put them on there. I drove to the office, and they had broken. I didn't even make it to the office. And I was like, oh, there you go. I paid $30 for that. Yeah, I it's just the world we live in, right? And I mean, look, protect yourself, but at the same time, you got to respect businesses. I think there's needs to be some respect for business owners. I think people also think, and I don't know how to even phrase this, but there seems to be this overwhelming thing, like if I give you money, like if I transact with you, then you owe me something for that.
Yep.
Other than the product we promised you to deliver.
Yeah,
right?
I agree with that.
I don't get that. I don't understand.
It's almost
that
a little ownership.
And what people will do, and I'm going to put this out there, and I'm sorry if I offend somebody with this, but people bait us all the time.
Oh.
Hey, I plan on coming to a school in the future if you'll do me this favor. Look, F you. I'm just saying right now, I love you. Please come to a school. There's nothing I want to do than help you. But don't use that as bait for us to do something for you. That's such a bait. I don't like that anymore. I'm like, oh my God, what are you trying to say to me? You know,
well, it's,
look, you want to come to school? I'll sign you
up. It's interesting because this is what people don't realize. And you ask me this continually. You always ask me this. I do 15 to 20 fittings a day. Maybe on busy days, 30 to 40 fittings a day. That's people who send in for the free club fit. And you continually ask me this. 75% have never spent a penny with our company. Have never spent one penny. So whether, I mean, and maybe they will eventually, maybe they have, maybe they haven't, maybe they, you know what I'm saying? Maybe they're building, and some do, and some, you know.
But I got a question for you though. If you come to our school, and I don't even know how to say this, but if you're coming to our school, are you doing us a favor or are we doing you a favor?
Yeah, that's a great question. Yeah, it's a great question.
Because you want our help, and we're the only ones that can provide it for you, and you're paying for that. Yeah, because we're spending our time, which is valuable, just like your time is valuable. And so now I'm going to come to a school. Well, that doesn't do me any benefit.
Right.
I mean, you give my company, I pay my staff and yeah, you help us. Great. Because in that regard, we can run our company and I'm going to invest that right back into our team.
But here's the interesting
part. But we're doing you a favor.
But here's the interesting part. And this is the real sense of this, because me and you do teach some very astute business owners and some very guys that have done extremely well in business over time. I mean, a couple per se that, I mean, they almost mentor us. I mean, we could say they do mentor us because it's about, you know, we teach them, but they're amazing guys and gals. And we tell them what we do. And I remember the one that we deal with, you know, from California, who me and you both teach. And he kind of asked me what my given day does and the given day that I teach, you know, like in schools. And he looked at me and he said, Tim, do you know how much money you're losing when you go stand on that line and teach the students? Yeah. He goes, do you have any idea how much money you're losing? He goes, you shouldn't be doing that. And I said, I wouldn't be in this business if I couldn't do that. Number one. Number two is, I said, that's like the vacation part to me, is when I can actually go teach somebody in person.
I was telling, we have a good friend, Tom Tan, in the studio today. And I was telling Tom, I was like, Tom's like, how much time are you actually spending teaching? Mm-hmm. We were talking this morning. I was like, Tom, that's what I love to do.
Right.
That's the part I love. Right. Right? So I said, the business shit is the stuff that I don't love, which is where you get trapped. It's the, right. It's the entrepreneur's trap. Like, we want to do what we love to do. And then to do that, we have to do all this periphery, to build the business, and we have to spend our time dealing with guys who are death threats and shit like that. But I mean, that's where we spend our time. I mean, how many times do you spend your time in a day dealing with stuff you really, 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 really love to do?
It's small.
But that's part of business. Right. I mean, we accept that. But I mean, and so you learn to kind of deal with all that stuff. Right. But the love part is out there watching people have joy.
The part I enjoy when I'm online on the email is when I know I got a customer helping. Or student. No, that trust me.
Helping.
And literally sits there saying, get this set up for me. And
you're
I know
allowed
that
to help.
They're going to enjoy it. Yep, absolutely. Yep. And it's going to bring more joy, trust, more enjoyment to them. Trust in it. Yep.
Totally.
That's when I enjoy it. Yep. And it's funny, but when I get those emails, I know in the first sentence, the first one or two sentences, that there's trust there. I can read it in the I've showed you that before. I can sit there and say, when you talked about someone being on the line and saying, you know, this person, you can see if this person wants help or not, if they're going to blame you, or if you know, like what Jared said, you know, I don't want to work with that guy anymore. I see an email little in the first two lines. I can see in the first two lines. And so I'll know it. And do I respond to them all? Yes. But I know where they're going. Yeah.
You try to help.
Yeah. Oh,
You'll try to be helpful, and you immediately find out whether you're able to help or not.
Right.
Yeah. That's why this whole thing works, right? If you can be helpful, you want to be of service, right?
Right.
But if you can't be helpful, you want to get out of it as fast as you can. 100%. If you're going to be roadblocked and questioned and belittled because you get all that, like you don't know what you're talking about, you just want to go move on. Whatever. I in my little environment where I'm doing a lot of YouTube stuff, and I deal with all the comments on YouTube and stuff. Here's what I'll say about the people that comment on YouTube. You don't have enough information about what we do to make the comments that you make.
Right.
Like you just see the one little bit of a video that you don't agree with or whatever, but you didn't watch all 50 videos on the subject. Or you have an opinion and there's no facts that back up your opinion. There's no basis to your opinion. It's just something you read in a book, like you're stuck with it. So I read these comments and I don't respond to most of them because I'm like, they just are uninformed. But I will say this, be nice. Right. Be nice. Oh, they're just as bad on YouTube as everybody. I just delete people.
Right.
In the YouTube, you can go in there and behind the scenes, you can see all the people you've blocked, right? Because if you basically block the comment, you block them from the channel. The other day I was like, I wonder how many people I've blocked. So I opened up my YouTube and Tim, it filled the entire computer screen because I have a zero tolerance level for it. You know me, I have zero tolerance. So here's what I do. And just so you know, I look at communication online just like I look at communication in this room. If I don't want to be in the room with you having a conversation, I don't want you in my universe.
Right.
So I just delete you from it. That's my rule.
Yep.
So I delete you from the YouTube universe, my universe. Go be somebody else's universe. I delete you from my universe. Right. So because I'm like, would I want to spend a minute with that person in the same room?
Nope.
Like, would I want to be in the same room? It's like this guy that sent us this phone call. And so my rule of thumb is if I don't want to spend time with that person, I delete them from my universe. That's just my rule.
Well, you know mine, and we can kind of end it here, but get to the point. But you know mine, because it always comes down to this. That person says, when I sit, then I'll tell them either through an email they need to go away, or, you know, and they'll always come to me and they'll say, I can't believe you lose a customer over that, which and what, you know, I told you this the other day, my response is, I said, as a co-owner of this company, here's my responsibility. My responsibility is I do not want you coming to a golf school, because here's what it is. I'll deal with you on the email, but the last thing I want you is for you to be in front of my other students or in front of my staff. So I'm protecting my other students and my staff. And I always tell them that. And I sit there because they're like, I cannot believe you lose a customer over that. And I'm like, no, I don't want you around.
Here's the point. You protect the team.
Right, protect the team. That's what I tell them.
Protect the team. Because we have a business now. I don't know how many employees we have. We hired a couple last week. Our primary responsibility is to protect the team, which means that when we make revenue, it's to help pay for the team.
Right.
Right? We don't stick it in our pockets. Tim, when's the last time you got a raise?
You tell me.
At the same time you got a raise.
Long
which is never.
Ago.
Yeah. I don't think I've had a raise in 10 years.
Yeah.
So we could run this company. We don't make a ton of money doing it. And all the money goes to the organization to run, to pay. These guys have to live. They have wives. Clayton here running the podcast just got married, right? Just got back. Congratulations, by the way.
Got back for his honeymoon.
Yep. Just got back last week. Thank God you're back. Got tons of work for you to do. I got a whole desk as a pile of it. But again, and if these guys aren't happy and they're not having good lives, we suck. Our lives suck.
Yep.
So my job is to make sure the team's protected. And when you pay for a golf school, the money goes to the team. It doesn't go in my pocket. Right. It doesn't go in your pocket.
Right.
And so I think people have to just have some respect for the fact that businesses are hard to run. And there's a whole bunch of people behind the curtain that are doing all this stuff. I remember the last school, I was talking to James. We have carts breaking down. We have staff up. There's one person working the Eagle Creek staff managing all the people coming. We couldn't get even tea and water into the room where we're having lunch.
Right.
And so all the stuff's going on. It's like, James, you know, James is handling it, right?
Yep.
He's running.
Yep.
And I said at the end of school, I'm like, you guys got to thank James. I mean, he's helping the experience. These guys didn't see the fact that they didn't have tea and water because James is solving it.
Here's what's interesting. And this is what people don't see. It's very interesting because, you know, the guy shows up at school at 9 o'clock in the morning, right there in the morning. He comes until 3:30 and has a great day, or their hopes to have a fun day at the school. James showed up at 6:30 in the morning to get the room set up, to try to get all the food for the people, to get everybody in the room. Okay. He's taking care of all the people from 6:30 in the morning. He's now making sure everybody is where they're supposed to be for the entire day, plus teaching, plus making sure the Eagle Creek staff is doing what they're supposed to do, and plus making sure the food's up there.
Plus, he's making sure we're all organized, the team's
making
organized.
Sure the staff's organized. And then at 3:30 in the afternoon or 4 o'clock, he starts breaking down. He starts tearing stuff down at 4 till 5, okay? At 5 o'clock, he literally goes to the house and he starts answering emails. Now, we'll go to dinner at 6, about 6:30. That's his entire break of the day, usually from 6 to 7. So from 4 o'clock when he went home, or 4:30 when he went home, until 9 or 10 o'clock the night or later, he's on the email. You know this. He's on the email the entire time. And then guess what? Next morning hits, it's Groundhog Day. It's the exact same
Groundhog
thing again.
Day,
it's Groundhog Day. Exact same thing again.
Every day?
Every single day.
And so when he comes home, he wants a freaking break.
Every single day. So he goes, it's every single
day. He wants to come home and get 2 days of just, I don't want to deal with it.
Everybody thinks that sitting in that tea is like, you know, the is like, oh, you guys just love your teaching job. It is crazy.
Yeah, the teaching's great.
You can't even keep up with the emails.
BS that goes around it, it's hard. The teaching's great.
Yep.
It's funny because I did a deposition a couple years ago, and I remember it was... It wasn't a corporate dep, which a corporate dep, if people don't know what that is, it's the corporate representative is representing the company, right?
That was me last time.
That was you on the last one.
Yeah, yeah.
But I guess I was doing a corporate dep, but I wasn't scheduled to be the corporate dep. Or maybe it was a corporate dep. I don't remember. But anyway, she's asking me questions that I can't answer. Like, did you send this email? No.
Yeah.
Like, did you write this email? No.
Yeah.
Didn't write that email. Can you look at your school schedule? Yeah, I didn't do that. I didn't come up to school. Yeah. And so I do about a six hour deposition. At the end of the deposition, the opposing attorney says, do you even work for this company? Well, she didn't point out the stuff that I actually do for the company. She was going to all the stuff that everybody else does at the company. And my attorneys were like, yeah, she'd ask you all the questions of stuff that no company owner does in their own company. Why do I hire people to do the stuff I can't do? Right. It was really funny. She goes, do you even work for this company? Oh God. But yeah, no. So let's do another podcast. I can't wait to talk golf.
Yep.
I mean, this is a golf podcast. And one final thing. On club fitting, if people want, I think fitting is extremely important. Mm-hmm. Number one, I think one of the most important things that is probably, I don't know, you spend more time with than me, is set makeup.
Yep.
Like, talk to me as we wrap up this podcast, because I think one of the things that, to me, I find, just like we just finished playing in Las Vegas, is club selection out there based on the course I was playing. Like, I'm gonna rephrase this question in an angle. There's clubs I take in and out of my bag.
Yep.
Like my driver is the same usually. Yep. I say usually.
I know you're going with this. I can answer for you right
now. Okay, but let me finish the question just so I stage it up.
Okay.
So like I have two drivers, right? Well, they go in and out. Okay.
Right.
But mostly one.
Right.
I have a bunch of three woods.
Yep.
Like I have a handful of three woods.
Yep.
I have hybrids all over the place.
Yeah.
Okay. And then I got obviously my irons.
And your wedges. Yep.
And then my wedges, but there's wedges in and out too.
Yep.
So how many clubs should you actually own?
I wrote the article, 20 club bag.
20 club bag.
Yeah. Because, I mean, people, and I got blasted over that article because you're trying to sell clubs. And I said, nope. I said, you play courses, different clubs, different times. I mean, you walk out on a golf course and it's blowing 40 miles an hour out. You're going to try to hit a five hybrid versus a five iron. You're crazy. That five hybrid's going to blow over
the
place.
So it comes down to strategy.
100%.
Because if I strategize the course I'm going to play, and these guys play the same courses a lot.
Doesn't matter, but you got conditions change. Even if they play the same course, I mean, one day it could be dead calm, one day it could be blowing, one day the greens could be running fast, one day they could be slow. Todd, you play the same course. We play Oaktree National, and right now the fairways are dead, dormant brown, harder than a rock. 6 months from now, they're going to be lush, green, most beautiful fairways. It's different equipment, different way. It's different equipment that's playing right. You couldn't hit a long iron off those fairways right now if your life depended on it.
Right.
Hybrid would be the simplest thing in the world. But it's like Cascada. We played out there. And I wanted to put a four hybrid in your bag so bad when we started playing a couple holes because I realized, Todd, the first hole we played, and we're going to get more into this in conversation. First hole we played, we had 152-yard shot uphill. And we looked at the caddy. It was into the wind. This is the first hole we played. And we looked at the caddy and he gauged it. He had his little thing in it and he goes, how far are we playing? And he goes, 185. Remember this? Mm-hmm. And we're 152. And he goes, you got to play this 185 because it was that far uphill and it was that much wind and it was cool out. Well, that's a four iron. That's a five or four. And well, guess what? You can't hit a five or four iron high enough up to hit that green and hold it because those greens are running about 20. You had to have a four hybrid.
Yeah, because a four iron comes in too low. Usually.
There's no way. And I remember you pulling out a four iron and I'm like, you remember that? And you wanted so bad to go to five iron. I carry a four hybrid. I actually carry a five hybrid too now. And so bad, I wanted to sit there and say, we should have had a four hybrid in your bag. We didn't know the course. Okay. We didn't know it because we didn't have practice or anything on this course, but it was a four hybrid shot. And we had three or four of those during the day, if you remember. Mm-hmm. But that's about playing. That's smart golf.
20 club bag. That's a really good advice. I mean, 20 clubs. And so basically you're going to have, I don't know about the driver because I usually don't change drivers.
Yeah, driver's the same, but three woods, five woods,
plus
seven
you can
woods.
Adjust your driver. Driver's adjustable too. Mm-hmm. But if you talk about like the three wood, I have a low launch three wood and a high launch three wood. Low launch is when I realize I'm going to have to hit off the tee.
Right.
Like, there's this massive gap between driver and three wood.
That's why, because most of our students shouldn't carry three woods. They should carry because they don't have enough loft to the fairway. Right. So it's five woods only.
Or a really high loft of three.
But if they have a real tight golf course, pull that three wood out. Right. So all of a sudden they off throw the three in the bag off the tee. Yeah.
Off the tee.
So
and then hybrids will be, you know, I have one hybrid, but you want me to carry two.
I have four. I carry two, three, four, and a five.
Yeah. I only have one.
I carry two when there's wind out there. You know, because I put that two in my bag for that first day. It got really windy. You know what I'm saying? I carry three, four, and now I have a five iron and a four iron also. But if I've got elevated greens or with wind and so on, I'll bring those in and out of the bag. So not only I have hybrids and irons that I carry at different times.
Yeah.
It's two, three, four, five. And then you got the six, you know, six of the wedge, but then the wedges, you add some extra wedges in there. You play a shorter course. You want to add a 64 degree loft or you want to put a fourth wedge in there, a fifth wedge in there. You want to put that in there. You don't need the high irons in there. You need some getting here.
And then the other thing I'll throw in there, this may be a little advanced, but the turf conditions.
Oh, huge.
Because it was huge for us this last week because we played the TPC course and it was just dormant, just shit, hard to hit the shots off the fairways. The bounce on the club was really affecting my wedges especially. Yep. I was bouncing that wedge up there.
Well, the middle loft of wedge, I mean, with the grinds on them, you know what I'm saying? Like you got the lower grinds with like a C grind to work pretty much in anything when you get those lower grinds. But you start talking the 54s and the 48s, and that's the ones you were talking about. Mm-hmm. That's when you start talking, you get the S grind in there, and you want, if you don't have a C grind, you're talking
about. I would have switched out some wedges if I had them with me. I didn't have them with me. But yeah. And then putter, probably same. I don't change putters. Yeah. But waiting maybe.
Well, the only thing about putter that's interesting, and most people deal with this, but guys that do like a chest putter, like the broomstick, and it gets really windy out and they start waving that thing all over the place, you'll see them go to a shorter putter. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Because it gets really windy out.
Yeah.
But putters pretty much stay the same.
Yeah.
There is times I've seen, it's not very often, and older pros talk about this, they used to get really slow greens and they wanted putters with more loft. So they have two of the exact same putter, but one putter would have like 8 degrees loft and one would have like 2 degrees loft.
That's interesting.
The one with no loft would be for like, you know, for faster greens, ones with, but now those greens don't exist anymore.
Yeah. Everybody says so fast anymore.
Yeah. And people are like, well, my greens are slow. No, you don't know what slow greens are. You know what I'm saying? So that course would have closed if they're that slow. Yeah. Literally, the greens they're talking about is like putting your first cut of rough now. So, but they secure different lofted putters.
Well, and I'll tell you, in Q school, years ago, I played, and this is, again, high level shit, but I'm playing in Q school, and I remember at the time I was playing a ping driver. This is way when I was a long time ago. And then I broke it.
Yep.
I smashed the face. Yep. It just caved in. And so now I'm in the middle of God knows whatever, in the middle of a really important tournament, and I don't have a driver. And I had to borrow, a friend had, one of the tour players had an extra one in his car. And it was just super stiff.
It was a little different.
It was super stiff.
Well, then the interesting, that was the time there weren't adjustable shafts. You couldn't change the shaft. But if you remember that year between me and you, it was the pink ISI driver. Remember that?
Yeah.
And we broke seven of them that year. The face was so thin. They were trying to make those thin faces. We broke seven that year. And one happened to break because we were both at the tour school together. Yep. Happened to break at your tour school.
Yeah. I hit a shot and it went straight into the trees right.
Yep. You know, the face was cracked. The top line and the top groove cracked.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, it was rough. Yep. It was a rough week. But the crap you deal with that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Tim, thanks again for joining me today. What a amazing podcast. This was so funny because we were sitting there and after we had got that message on the phone, I'm like, we have to talk about this on the podcast. This is such good material so people can see what's going on behind the curtain here at Graves Golf.
And then you looked at me and said, what are we going to call? I said, can't make that shit up.
Can't make this shit up. Can't make this shit up. So, hey, folks, thanks for joining us today. And look, be nice out there to people. Just be nice. Trust me, it's the best way to be. And go love your neighbor. That's the message of this podcast.
I go home and give it dog time. Give me some dog time.
Give me some dog time. Give me some dog time. If you can't love your dog, then you need to get therapy.
Dog time.
All right. We'll see you on the next podcast. Thanks again.